Earthquakes, lightning, pouring rain, tornadoes, tsunamis, and a hurricane. Killer Earth.
Hi, Kat.
Well, hello, V.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm sick.
Yeah. I'm so sorry. That's okay. Terrible.
It's not the Rona. Don't worry.
Ugh, I know, right?
Yeah.
It's like, that's, thank God for that.
It's like a strep thing that I've been getting over by myself.
Aww.
With no help from anyone.
Well, that's good. You're independent.
Yeah.
Independent woman.
How is your weekend?
It's very chill, actually. I made a big pot of soup yesterday.
Ooh.
And brought some to my mother-in-law and brought some to my sister. She also has a two-year-old. So I brought some soup and, you know, played with Colby a little bit, my nephew, which gave her some time to like take a nap. So that was good.
Good.
And then today I've done absolutely nothing and it's been amazing.
That's okay.
Yeah, I love it.
I love those days.
I know.
So you, when we were talking last week, you said that you noticed that we never like introduced ourselves on the first episode.
Yeah.
We didn't say our names.
we're mystery podcasters. You'll never know. I'm sure we like said V and Kat, which is kind of like what we call each other. But I'm Catherine Gifford. Hello, everyone.
I'm Vanessa Hill.
Yeah. So that's our real names.
Yeah, those are our names. This is the second episode of Killer Earth.
Yeah. It's coming along. We're doing it.
Yeah. We're learning so much about the world.
We are. And I'm learning so much about this equipment.
Podcasting equipment?
Yes.
Yeah, me too.
It's like there's some kind of troubleshooting every single time before we even can hit record.
Yeah.
And I'm still like learning about my mic. I might have to get a new one. Last episode, I sounded a little kind of far away, but you know, we're working on it. You could still hear me. We still told you our stories.
Also, when we first started working on the podcast, you could not order electronics in this country to save your life. Like there was nothing available. So we had to order like random microphones.
Didn't you order like 5 microphones because every single one like didn't work for some reason?
I ordered 3 total. The first one just died and it's an expensive microphone and I can't figure out how to fix it. The second one is the one I'm using now and it's awesome, but like the
equipment so clear on it.
Good. The equipment that came with it, I couldn't figure out the holder. Then the third one I ordered, it says on Amazon, compatible with MacBook Pro. And then you open the user manual when it comes and it's like not compatible with any Macs.
Oh my gosh.
What the fuck?
So annoying. Yeah, yeah. It's like, you know, guys, it takes a village to do a podcast, believe it or not. It really does. And unfortunately, our village is just you and I right now. So we're getting by.
Googling random things.
Yeah.
But we're figuring it out.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So, and we have a really awesome logo that our friend Leah did for us. She's amazing. Mm-hmm.
My brother doesn't like it.
He thinks it's like cartoonish, like too cartoonish, which it is, but like it's our vibe.
That's what we wanted. And I think Leah did exactly what we asked her to do.
Yeah, it's great. Good. Yeah. Owen, you can just
buzz off with your opinions, you little bitch.
Oh, man. Well, yeah, so we've come far and we're excited to be bringing you more stories about weather related disasters.
Yes.
And I guess it's not just weather. It's just anything like not supernatural.
No. It's not ghost stories.
I mean, there might be some ghost stories. That would be awesome, but we'll see. But yeah, anything like natural disaster-ish, we're gonna cover eventually. So.
Oh, also, before I forget, I had a little correction to make from the first episode.
Oh, yeah. Please tell us.
It's so not a big deal, but I said on the on the first episode that I was a sophomore. No, that I was a freshman in college when Katrina happened.
Oh, okay.
I was a sophomore and you were a junior, and that doesn't even matter, but it bothered me because I like didn't, it was 2005. So I was definitely a sophomore.
Okay. Well, that's great that you corrected that.
Yeah. It's not even important, but I felt the need to.
You know what?
Set it
you
straight.
Have to tell your truth.
I do. I try to on the regular.
Yep. Well, who's going to go first? I mean, you went first last time. So do I go first this time?
I think you should.
Okay, cool. Well, this is the story about Jacob's Well, which I found really interesting. It's probably considered one of the most dangerous places to dive in the world. Mm-hmm. And it is right outside Austin, Texas. Before I get started, I'd like to cite my sources. Got some really great articles from the following: treehugger.com, Wikipedia, of course, Texas Water Development Board, because I had to kind of dive deep in understanding this.
You're
well.
So scholarly.
I know. All that I'm doing like more homework on my podcast than I ever think I did in my life. So all that is interesting. And crone.com. So obviously, like, this is a well that's kind of right outside of Austin, about an hour southwest of Austin, in a place called Hays County. And it's basically a really popular swimming hole for people who want to cool off in the summers. It gets super hot there. So you know, it's a big kind of touristy attraction. I've even heard of it. For some reason, I've never been, but I've always wanted to go because it looks so beautiful. It's like this turquoise water. It almost looks like Caribbean-esque. Like, it's just really, really pretty. But I never made it.
Just to interject here.
Yeah.
When we had talked about this before, I had a really hard time visualizing this. So I did Google a photo of it.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, because here in Vermont, everyone has a well for our water.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So I was like, I'm like having a hard time picturing a well where you would swim. But basically, it's like,
a hole in the ground.
It's like a big hole in the ground with like stones, stacked like on the sides of it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. So it's not like a drinking water well. And actually, you know, when you... It's kind of like when you have a hole in the earth, the water usually is pulled down, you know, because of gravity, and it just goes down the hole.
Right.
This is an interesting swimming hole because the water is actually pushed up.
And it's like up to the surface?
Yeah. Like it's like the rain and the stuff that comes from storms like sink into this ground. And I'm going to get into like how this works, but it sinks into the ground, and then the pressure of the earth basically is pushing this liquid up, and liquid like wants to always be released out of pressure. That's just like how it works.
Right.
Again, not a scientist, but I'll try to do the best I can to explain how it works. So Jacob's Well is called a karst spring. And I didn't know what that was, so I had to look it up. So basically it's an outflow of groundwater formed from the dissolution of soluble rocks such as limestone, dolomite, and gypsum. And those rocks, like limestone, happens to be very, very porous. And we have a lot of limestone in Texas. So basically, like the water underneath the limestone and all of that, if it can find a way to shoot back up to the earth, it will. And that's kind of what this well is.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay. And I actually wrote down, this is kind of my like scientific explanation. So, you know, stop me if it sounds weird. I tried my best. I did not do well in science, everyone. So
I didn't either.
That was like really hard for me.
I could memorize everything, but when it came to like the labs, I was like, I'm going to light something on fire with like this crucible Bunsen burner contraption. What is this?
Oh yeah, it was not good grades in those times at all for me. The only like science class I actually really did well in was physiology and anatomy.
That's like the hardest class, anatomy and physiology.
Yeah. I really liked it because I guess I'm such a visual learner. And so like, because I had a body, I could like look at things and be that makes sense.
I took that in college too. And I got straight A's in it. But the only reason is because I studied my ass off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a lot of memorization. So if you say you can remember things well, that's like really amazing. But when it came to like cells and like things growing like cellularly, I was like, no. I do not understand this. I still don't understand it.
But. Do you remember what the powerhouse of the cell is?
Wait, hold on.
Don't Google it.
No, I won't. Nucleus?
No.
Wait. Give me one more guess. The proton?
No.
Oh.
Of the cell.
I know. I don't know.
It's the mitochondria.
Wait, I thought that was...
That's all I remember.
Oh my God, I have no idea. But thank you for the fun trivia. Because
you're welcome.
Yeah, I could have kept you're guessing.
You're so welcome. Okay.
Well, you go, you scientists out there. Go cure some things.
Yeah.
Okay. So my scientific explanation is it's called hydrostatic pressure is the reason why this well is getting water from the underground. Basically, hydrostatic pressure is when it's water pressure that is static because for the most part, it doesn't move because it just sits there unless it has a release of pressure. So again, like the weight of the earth is like pressing down on this thing called an aquifer. And the aquifer is basically bodies of water that sit underground. And Texas actually has a lot of them, and it's called the Trinity Aquifer, and it extends across much of central and northeastern part of the state. It is composed of several smaller aquifers contained within the Trinity Group, and the aquifers, if you'd like to know, are the Antlers, Glen Rose, which also everyone should go to Glen Rose, Texas. It's awesome. I love it there. There's like this safari animal park.
Oh.
Where you can like feed the animals.
Yes.
And they actually have dinosaur tracks like that you can go see in the mud. Yeah, it's amazing. So let's go to there.
Yeah.
I think I'm gonna try to go over Christmas because I just love feeding the animals and listening to like the theme song of Jurassic Park as we're like driving through.
Oh, like on your car stereo?
Yes.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's like my dream.
Okay, so the Antlers, Glen Rose, Paluxy, Twin Mountains, Travis Peak, Hensel, and Hauston aquifers. Just a little education for all of you. But again, these are the bodies of water that sit underground. And basically, Jacob's Well, the water found a way to get out and like created this like hole. And that's like what the well is, if that makes any sense to everybody. But yeah, it's really beautiful though. Again, water's super cold because the water is coming from deep underground. And it's a 12-foot wide opening in the creek bed of Cypress Creek. So that's, so it's like 12 feet wide, but the hole goes down vertically 30 feet, but that's only what you can see from the surface. So you look into this giant hole and it goes down 30 feet. And then if you go far enough under, the tunnel then turns at an angle and continues downward for another 100 feet. So like, no, thank you. I think it's really awesome that people like to like scuba dive and go do all that, but no, thank you. I would literally have a heart attack trying to go down there.
No, I wouldn't. I don't even want to scuba dive in open water.
No. I mean, I really, really do, but like, I don't. I think it freaks me out.
I want to breathe just regular air. I don't need my air in a tank. One of my closest friends, Alex, she's a professional scuba diver basically. And I just can't, when she tells me stories about like, she almost like died like several times.
Oh, that's so awful.
At work.
How?
At work. Like just things that go wrong with the equipment, or like a boat propeller, or like someone is freaking out underwater. Like it just sounds like the worst. I just don't want to ever scuba dive.
No, I don't either. Like, it's like too claustrophobic in that mask. Like, yeah. I kind of do, but I like don't. Like, maybe I've considered it, but it's like, you know, my dad had an acquaintance that he and his, you know, buddy were out scuba diving, and they were like deep down, and the guy like went up because something was like malfunctioning with his mask or something, but you're never supposed to leave your partner, but he did anyway. And then my dad's acquaintance like was never found again. He like never came up.
Well, and also if you're deep enough, you can't just pop up to the surface, or you'll get the bends.
Ew.
Which is what when you get, mean? It means you get like gas.
It just sounded bad, so I didn't know what it was, but I was like, oh.
Yeah, it's called the bends. And it's when you get like gas bubbles in your blood, I think, and you basically become oxygen deprived and you die.
Okay.
Like you have a heart attack and die. It's like, so yeah, Alex has told me about it and I've heard about it, but
yeah,
the idea that like if there is an issue, you can't just pop up to the surface. If you want to get the fuck out of there, you have to like slowly come up. I don't know. I'm just never trying to do that.
No, me either. That sounds awful.
Yeah.
Okay. So anyways, but people are flocking to this well because, you know, it goes down so far, and then all of a sudden it like splits into these two caves. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Sorry, I'm just looking at my notes that I lost.
And the caves are all full of water, right?
Oh yeah, it's completely like the caves are. There's like two tunnels. Like one jets out like 0.85 miles one way in a straight direction, and then the other tunnel goes down 1,500 feet. And as the tunnel like snakes off in either direction, the average depth of the well stays around 120 feet, but reaches all the way down to 137 at its deepest point. So you're like, you're pretty down there. I mean, yeah. But people are like fascinated because they're like, oh my God, there's so many like, and okay. So I watched a video of, this guy, and I'll get into kind of his story, but he had what are those cameras you call again on your head? They're GoPro.
A GoPro.
Yeah. And the tunnels are so tiny. Some of them, so basically it's known there that you have like to get through some of these tunnels, you have to take off your scuba equipment just to get through them. Like you can't just like free swim into them.
So it's your oxygen tank is on your back and you have to take it off and like drag it behind you or something, or
yes, exactly. Because the tunnels are so slim. It's terrifying. I don't know why anyone does it. So the cave has been, Jacob's Well has, I keep calling it a cave, but I mean, Jacob's Well has been explored by divers since the early parts of the 20th century. There are even reports of divers in the 1930s attempting to use a milk bucket and a rubber hose to create a makeshift diving helmet. So what we're talking like 1930s, people were so fascinated to try to go and explore these caves, just find out what was really down there. But, you know, they did not have the equipment, like a milk bucket.
Like a milk bucket isn't clear.
So no.
How do you?
I don't know. Like a rubber hose with a... I don't get it. I mean, maybe they had a glass. Was it a glass milk bucket?
Oh yeah. I don't think plastic was invented.
But also like a bucket. I'm just so confused, but someone tell us if you know how that
works. Well, they used to use diving bells, which are those like metal things that go over you.
It's like, how did they ever like swim back up with all that weight?
I don't know. There's so many things we don't know.
Yeah, we're going to find all of it out, though. Okay, so however, it wasn't until 2000 that professional cave divers with proper scuba gear began to explore these caves. And the goal was to map out the entire cave network underneath the well. And this was called the Jacob's Well Exploration Project. The project revealed that the central passage of Jacob's Well eventually breaks off into the two main tunnels, and then they kind of like map it from there. So
what, sorry, what year was this?
In 2000.
Oh, wow. So recent.
Yeah. Cause like, that's how, yeah. like, that's how crazy these caves are. Like, it's really,
wow.
You have to be super like an expert diver if to like try to go through these and survive.
Yeah.
Which again, I don't know why anyone would want to. Also, it's just like really, really obviously dark, but it's also the, when you're like, your flippers are like kicking around in these small little crevices, the water can get really, really like milky fast. And it's like the visibility is so hard to like, you can't see anything.
Oh my God.
So that's like another reason. But I mean, we're talking about like extreme, you know, adventurers that, you know, are just like into it. Like the best divers are like, oh, I'm going to conquer that. You know, it's kind of like mountain climbing. Like, let's climb the craziest mountain ever. So people are still doing it.
Well, there, people like that have to have some kind of inner calm.
You really do. And I really wish I had that.
Me too. But I would have a panic attack like 10 feet in.
I wouldn't even be able to go. I think the reason I didn't go is because I was like afraid I was going to get sucked down the well, which is not how it works. But like,
yeah,
it's just so scary.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I want the inner calm. Like, how can we get that? A lot of meditation.
Like a lot of medication.
And a lot of, I said meditation and you said medication.
Medication, not meditation.
I mean, maybe both, but
like something that numbs me to the point where I like don't care.
I guess. I mean, hey, but then I don't think we'd function too well being like, adventuring these caves.
No.
Okay, so at least 8 or 9 people have died at Jacob's Well, but the exact number is hard to come by, which has prompted some people to call it one of the most dangerous diving spots in the world. 2 young Texas men were caught in one of the well's caves and drowned in 1979. 1 diver's remains were flushed out of the well in 1981.
So do you think these divers were, like, what happened? Like, they got lost and ran out of oxygen or something?
Yeah, like, and I have that story coming up on, like, how it happened. I don't know exactly how it happened actually, but I'll go through their story. But it really bothers me when it says like 1 diver's remains were flushed out of the well. So again, the water, like, you know, they probably got stuck in one of the holes or they lost or they blacked out. They, like you said, the bends thing, because I did read something about that where like, you know, you can black out in oxygen situations when you're diving or whatever.
Right.
But like the thought of like water, like, cause the water is coming from the caves and up through the well. So like flushing a body out, like really bothers me.
So like a body just like popped up on the surface.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
But like it was from 1979 and it didn't come up till 1981.
Oh my God. Okay.
Yeah.
I missed that part. Wow. Oh
my God. Others' remains weren't recovered until 2000.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So it's like, it's really disturbing. And that's why they don't really know how many people have died. Like, you know, are there still people like under there that like never came up that we don't know about?
Ooh, maybe.
Yeah. So the video I watched with the guy with the GoPro, his name is Diego Adame, Adame. He's a free diver daredevil. And he went into the well in 2015. He was 21 years old. And you can go watch it. It's called Jacob's Well Free Dive to 100 Feet, on YouTube. If you're interested, it's a short video, but it's really terrifying because you can see the whole thing. The video shows Diego diving into the, Jacob's Well without any supplemental oxygen. After reaching the bottom of the initial opening, he loses one of his flippers when it slips off his foot at about 100 feet below the surface. And I guess I read without a flipper and being that far down the water, it's really hard to get back up. I always thought flippers were really annoying because they seem to slow me down, but that's like me swimming around with them.
Yeah.
I didn't realize how important they are for diving.
Oh yeah. They like they turn you into a fish.
Oh my God. I mean, that makes so much sense. But every time I put them on, I'm like, it weighs me down. Maybe this is another reason why I don't dive.
Well, they don't feel normal when you're on you. They do feel heavy, but they do increase your speed. And
yeah. So like, think about like being down there and like losing your flipper and you're like, you just entered this like crazy cave.
Without an oxygen tank.
Yeah.
What the fuck? How does he do that? I don't get that.
I don't know. It's so weird.
I mean, how many minutes can you hold your breath for if you're super in shape? Like what, 4 or 5 minutes?
If you can, that is incredible. Like, I don't know. I can't even hold my breath for like 10 seconds.
It
makes me panicky.
I have an uncle who's like super fit, and I remember when I was younger telling me that he held his breath for like 4.5 minutes, but that was like him like almost like blacking out, trying to like see how long he could hold his breath.
That's a really good question. I wonder for like free divers, like what that, and think about all the pressure from being that far down and not breathing. I just don't understand, but people do it, I guess. So some divers in that very situation have blacked out while trying to get back up. Diego reacts immediately, turning around. To make matters worse, he loses his flashlight when pushing off the cave's walls.
Great, Diego.
So now no flipper, no flashlight.
You had one job. You had one job, Diego. Keep your fucking flashlight and your goddamn flippers. What the fuck?
And to maybe get an oxygen tank next time. Like, I don't know. And he said, he quotes, for a split second, I thought of death and myself dying that day. Luckily, Diego did not panic because he had his inner calm. Uh-huh. Maybe he was very medicated.
Diego is like a sociopath because that's what he's doing in the first place.
And he kept his breaths controlled it like from this article. I don't know. Like, how is he keeping breaths controlled if he's holding his breath? But maybe it's like, maybe it's something, I don't know how they work, do it. I don't know. And he didn't deplete the precious oxygen. So he immediately cut off his supply belt to eliminate extra weight and rapidly made his way back up to the surface before running out of air.
Wow.
So he was very, very lucky. And again, you can go watch this video on YouTube. It's really terrifying, actually. And then there were two people who also decided to, go down the well. This is the 1979 people I was talking about earlier from 1979, right. Kent Maupin, who was 20, and Mark Brashear, who was 21. Mm-hmm. They like went with a group of like 20 other people from Pasadena, California to go like, you know, camp out and explore this cave and whatnot. And again, it's like near San Marcos too. My sister actually bartended there and went to school there. And it is such a fun town. It's a college town. It's a party town. And then like all these rivers and like swimming spots. And oh man, I highly recommend just like going into Hill Country and hanging out with all those
college kids.
Yeah. Oh, so fun. And I was like in college when.
Sounds fun.
Yeah. I was like in college when two of my sisters lived. One lived in like Austin and one lived in San Marcos. So it was like party central when I went down on the weekends. It was so fun. Yeah. So anyways, they went with a group of people. Kent had been diving since he was 12 years old and was a certified dive instructor and a very experienced scuba diver for his age. Apparently, however, age may have contributed to Kent's death, and he and his friend, with the confidence of youth, ventured beyond the realm of safety, which is so true because the older I get, the more anxious I am about everything.
Too. Oh my God, me too.
I was invincible when I was younger. Like, heights didn't bother me. Like, give me all the thrills and I could do it. I remember being like, oh, if I was in that situation, I would have just been fine.
Or even like making shitty decisions, like being too drunk around sketchy people, or like, just like letting your guard down in a way that like, I just wouldn't now in my wise old age.
And I think like, how did I survive? I have no idea.
I know. We all probably should have died like 17 times.
Yeah. But we're like a cat. We have like 9 lives. Yeah. I might have 20 after my youngin days, but anyways, so yeah. So Maupin and Brashear arrived at the campground around 11:30 p.m. on September 9th, determined to make a dive. Like, they couldn't even wait any longer. They were like, okay, it's nighttime. Let's go make a dive.
Yeah, what the hell? Were they on some, like...
the intercom medication, you know.
Or maybe they were on something else.
Maybe, but like, they're such experienced divers and they probably just had that like, oh my God, we have to get this in now.
Oh,
like,
I didn't know they were throw. Did you say that they were experienced divers before?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Like he was the, remember, cause like one of them was a certified diver instructor. Right, right. Yeah.
Still seems irresponsible for.
Yeah. Nighttime. I mean, I guess it's dark there anyway, but oof, no thanks. According to those who were there that weekend, the two boys were not alone in the well at the time and were seen by other divers going into the dangerous fourth chamber. Ooh. So I guess like there's two tunnels, but and this kind of got complicated for me. I was trying to understand it. But anyway, the first chamber of the well drops straight down approximately 25 feet. The second descends another 35 feet. And the third chamber slopes gently down, narrowing to a depth of 75 feet. So this is like one of the tunnels that are categorized by chambers, I guess. At the end of the third chamber is an opening leading to the fourth chamber. At the time, the entrance to that chamber was about 18 inches wide and 15 feet long.
What?
Yeah.
18 inches wide.
Yeah. Like, I don't even think my butt could get through.
Yeah. How does your, like, what the hell?
Oh, geez. I don't know.
Why would you want to go through that? What the fuck? What are you trying to prove?
I 70s don't know.
Guys.
They're like, we got to go into the dark.
I am so different from them. I can't relate to them at all.
I can't either. Several who had previously entered the fourth chamber had not returned alive. So it's like really dangerous to go into the fourth chamber. And I guess, like I said, they weren't alone. So witnesses saw them go in there.
Right.
Around midnight that night, the two young men were seen at the entrance to the chamber, backing into the opening and pulling their tanks behind them. Joe Moy, so they like removed their tanks just to get through the 18 inches, I guess.
Yeah.
Joe Moy, a diver who said he was stunned to witness the scene, remembered that the two had no backup lights and no safety line. In a Texas Monthly report from 1980, Moy said he flashed his light back and forth trying to get Brashear's attention, who had gone in last, but Brashear would not look at him. Moy remained submerged as long as he could, hoping the two divers would come back out, but finally ran out of air and was forced to head to the surface. He said at that time he knew the boys were dead.
Oh, he knew they were dead.
Yeah, because I guess he was trying to be like, don't go in there. You have no backup. You don't have a safety line. You have no...
Yeah,
like, he had a bad feeling. Really trying to help. Yeah. And he was like, don't go in there. You just shouldn't. Like,
that's so nice that he waited for them.
I know.
He's now traumatized.
I know. So obviously, like, they never came up, and Kent's parents stood on the banks of the river for a week waiting for his remains to be brought up. Over a week later, after extensive effort, the recovery work was called off when entry into the corridor was proven to be impassable.
What? Like, why?
So here's why. Don Dibble, one of the main recovery divers on the case, was seriously injured in the attempt to locate the remains. At that time, he didn't want anyone else injured to, at that time, Malcolm said he didn't want anyone else injured in order to find his son. So Malcolm was like the dad of either Kent or Brashear. I'm not sure which one, and I apologize for that.
Wow.
But basically he knew that like people were going to die, like, or get majorly hurt again if they kept trying to go in there and get the remains out.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't want to continue trying to get him. He said in quotes, I told Don, who was the recovery diver, I was afraid someone else might get hurt or even die. And I just didn't want that to happen. Dibble, who is a, sorry, I already said that. Dibble later went back to the well with a team of divers and cemented a grate over that part of the cave, the fourth chamber, so no one else could get in.
How do you do that underwater?
I don't know. So I was literally trying to picture that. So like, okay, cemented a grate. So like first of all, cement, like, doesn't it need to dry?
Yeah.
So
it sure does.
There's so many questions, and I'm sorry I don't have all the answers. No, I'm not a scientist, but
we're not like construction workers laying the cement.
Yeah. So I found that to be interesting. And that was really, you know, good of the Dibble guy, recovery diver, to like do that. But
then it's also like, okay, but now you've cemented over the opening so we can't get their bodies out.
I know.
It's weird.
So anyway, like, whether, so it didn't really last long because, it eventually, washed away the grate. So like now you can still go in it.
Okay.
So it's not there anymore, but he tried. And then that's when, you know, we found out that, I believe, hold on, let me just look at my notes really quickly here. Okay. So yeah, basically Kent, was the one who was flushed out of the well in 1981, finally, after, you know, 3 years of, trying to like figure out where his body was. And then, Brochier, was the one discovered in 2000.
Oh, okay.
Way later, Mark Brochier. So it's really tragic and it's really dangerous. But I found this whole thing to be interesting because of the way, the well, is like the whole karst spring situation. And also, that it's like one of the most dangerous spots to dive in the world. And that is my story about Jacob's Well.
Oh my God. I love it.
Did you learn a lot?
Yes. And so I would say that you and I should go there sometime.
Yeah. I want to go to all the places we can.
I know.
So like all the disaster places.
I do want to like float on the surface, you know, swim on the surface just for a minute. And then,
yeah, I would do it.
You know, I'm an excellent swimmer.
No, yeah. Vanessa is literally an excellent swimmer.
I'm a very good
swimmer. Like a fish. You like don't even need flippers, probably.
I could tread water for hours. Like there's no issue. But it would be cool to go and see because when I did Google the photos, it does look gorgeous. And there are people
gorgeous.
There's people like sitting on the edge with their feet in the water, and it's, you know, it's like level with like the like rest of the swimming area kind of that you like walk on.
Would you jump? Apparently there's like, and don't quote me on this, but I think what I read is that there's like places you can jump from up high, like a cliff, not a cliff, but did you see like the kind of rocks around the well, like with the vines?
I think so.
Well, you can jump, I think at some points into the well, like if you could, would you try to jump and get down 30 feet to touch the ground?
No, but also... I have a fear of heights. Like I'll never jump off anything.
Oh, me too.
But I'll swim anywhere. I don't care.
I used to jump off a lot of things, but I only jump off.
No, I can't.
Not a lot anymore.
That's just not for me.
Cool. Well, I hope everyone learned everything and definitely go visit it. It is gorgeous. And I know I've been like in the vicinity. I just never made it there. So, maybe next time.
If you Google it, you will see how gorgeous it is. It really does look like a really cool place to hang out and go swimming. And I'm sure even though it's freezing, it's so fucking hot there.
It's so hot. Yeah. You will like, oh yeah. You'll need that water.
Yeah.
You'll enjoy it.
It probably feels amazing.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Wow, well, great.
I love it. You did so much. You did so much like crazy research. You were like at the water board.
The Texas Water Development Board.
The technical deets.
I had to find out. Like, you know, that's what this is about. We're going to be experts eventually.
We're trying to. We're
going to try to. We're probably like failing.
Probably like every other
classes.
Every other thing we say is probably inaccurate.
I know. Hey, you know, Should we take a break and then come back?
Yeah, let's take a little short break. And we're back.
Why, hi.
Hi, we're learning so much about this Zoom.
Yeah, it's awesome. And I will give all the props to Vanessa because she's editing the podcast. She's learning so much.
I really
good am. Job.
Getting some marketable skills.
Yeah.
Under my belt.
Let's do it.
Okay, so today we're going to talk about the Mount Tambora volcanic eruption.
Dun, dun, dun. That sounds so scary.
The largest and most destructive volcanic eruption ever.
Nuh-uh.
Yeah.
I don't even know this story.
Okay, I didn't either. And many people that I read about, geologists, were like, I never even heard of this.
Oh. Did it like happen? Okay, I'll just let you talk. I was going to say, did it happen a long time ago? Is that
it
why?
Did.
Okay.
Well, kind of.
Okay. Yeah.
It's also the most destructive explosion of any kind in the last 10,000 years.
Ooh, that's scary.
Yeah. So I got my information from Britannica.
Okay.
Wikipedia.
Yep.
Of course, Wikipedia. This channel Horror Stories on YouTube. And I found this really well-written article published in the Smithsonian.
Mm-hmm.
By, I think it's a journalist who specializes in geology or is a geologist who is also a journalist, by the name of Robert Evans. He wrote a really amazing piece about like hiking up Mount Tambora and
wow,
you'll hear about
just
it.
Just really quick. Aren't you so glad we have the internet?
Yeah.
Can you imagine trying to do this podcast like back when we were like
using an actual encyclopedia?
Yes. When you said Britannica, the encyclopedia, I was like, oh my gosh. I remember having to do book reports and being like, there was like a paragraph on the thing I chose. And I was like, great. How am I going to turn this into like a 5-page paper?
I feel like I probably like fluffed up every paper back in the day.
Oh, I did too.
lies about everything.
Yes. I mean, we had to get by somehow. So anyway,
I know.
I'm ready.
Okay. So before we get into it, I'm just going to give you two words, okay?
Okay.
And I'm going to ask you to remember these words.
Okay.
The first one is bicycle.
Oh, okay.
The second one is Frankenstein.
Bicycle and Frankenstein. Okay. I'll remember.
Bicycle's the first word. Frankenstein's the second. Okay?
Okay.
Got it?
Got it.
Okay. And there will be a quiz later.
Oh, okay.
Okay. All right. So Mount Tambora is a volcanic mountain on the northern coast of the island of Sumbawa, which is in Indonesia.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. I was like, I know my geography like really well, actually, but I don't know where that is. So, but it makes sense because Indonesia has like all those islands and everything.
Yes. So Indonesia is a country off the coast of Southeast Asia. And it's actually technically in both the Indian and Pacific Oceans.
Ooh.
And it's an archipelago, which is a group of islands like you mentioned.
Yeah.
Like the Hawaiian islands.
Archipelago. That's really
archipelago.
Interesting. Archipelago. Wow. Yeah. I didn't even know that that was like the term for like a bunch of islands.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So the Hawaiian
like Hawaii.
Island. Mm-hmm. Yep. That's an archipelago.
Okay. Cool.
Yes. So for a little bit more placement, Indonesia is below the Philippines and Malaysia, but it's above Australia. So it's like wedged in there.
Yeah.
With all its tons of islands.
Definitely on my bucket list to go to Indonesia.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that because Bali is in Indonesia and Bali is like my number one destination, like my dream trip. I would want to go there for like a month. I've heard so many amazing things about it.
I know.
Maybe when COVID is over, we could make our way over there.
Yeah.
I would love that. So it's April 1815.
Okay.
Okay. Mount Tambora is about 14,000 feet elevation high.
Okay.
So to put this in perspective, that's about half the height of Mount Everest.
Whoa.
Yeah. Because Mount Everest is around like 29 something feet, I think. 29,000 feet.
Not
29 feet.
For the ants. I took a moment and I was like, wait.
For the ants, if the ants were.
Yeah. For the ants, yeah, 100%.
And it's around the, so Mount Tambora is around the same height as Mount Rainier in Washington.
Okay.
Which also happens to currently be one of the most dangerous volcanoes in the world that hasn't
erupted.
Yeah.
Isn't it like going to erupt at some point soon or something?
I mean, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So many of the islands of Indonesia are situated on the convergent plate boundary of the Eurasian and Australian plate.
Okay.
So a convergent boundary is a boundary where two plates are moving towards one another.
So it's like also like could be an earthquake situation too.
Well, it is because okay. Indonesia is part of the Ring of Fire.
Ooh.
Where, so the Ring of Fire, like if you're looking at a map of the Pacific Ocean, the Ring of Fire, it's like an archway where it like goes down like Australia, the west coast of the US, like down like this coast of Mexico, down the coast, the west coast of South America. And then on the left side, it goes down like, you know, Japan, that side, down through Southeast Asia, and then like out towards kind of Australia.
Okay. And so do they call it a Ring of Fire? Because that's where like a lot of volcano, like,
yeah,
volcanoes like exist.
So the Ring of Fire, if you look at a map of where the volcanoes are on it, it looks like the Ring of Fire is like the region where they all like happen to be occurring.
Okay.
So 90% of all earthquakes on Earth occur on the Ring of Fire. And cool. Yeah, so it's like most earthquakes. And then
I'd like to see, I definitely want to Google this and like see the map. And
just you should. You should. Yeah. It's pretty interesting.
Maybe we can put it on Instagram.
It's also called the Rim of Fire.
Okay. I like the Ring of Fire better.
Yeah, I like the Ring of Fire better. Because the Rim of Fire sounds like a butthole. Like when
just
you
eat like spicy salsa.
Like when you eat something, like when you eat like a ghost pepper burrito. And you're hurting.
Oh my God. All right.
So also 75% of the Earth's most active volcanoes also occur on the Ring of Fire.
Okay.
Okay. So the Ring of Fire is a direct result of plate tectonics, which you probably remember from high school. Mm. So the movement and collisions of lithospheric plates, which are massive, irregularly shaped slabs of solid rock, generally composed of both continental and oceanic matter.
Okay.
The lithosphere is the rigid outer part of the Earth, consisting of the crust and upper mantle. So it's just like plates fucking banging into each other.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So the word Tambora means gone in Sumbawa. And the mountain is named this before the volcano because it was already a very treacherous, dangerous place to climb. And a lot of people just would disappear when they tried to climb up there.
Yeah. That sounds scary.
Yeah.
Like treacherous because of the rocks or like the elevation.
I'm not
sure.
if it's like
halfway Mount Everest, then that's a pretty high.
Mountain. Yeah. 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 I'm not actually, I should have researched that a little bit more, but that was just like the local kind of like the lore in the area, the village at the bottom of the mountain, like whenever they named it, people have just kind of, you know, gone up there and have never been
seen again. Came back, which makes sense for gone.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So volcanoes, a little bit about them because, you know, this is a science podcast. So
sorry, that made me laugh.
Large volcanic eruptions are considered to be the most devastating natural disasters to human civilization. The average impact they have on the environment is 2 to 4 years after they happen. Oof. Yeah. The intensity and type of volcanic eruption is determined by its magma. So magma is the hot fluid or semi-fluid below or within the Earth's crust. So thin and runny magma gases, thin and runny magma means that gases can escape much easier.
Okay.
So this is what happens with like an effusive eruption, which is just like slower lava flows that persist for many years and it's just like constantly erupting.
Right. And it doesn't have as many gases because it's not as runny.
So it's like the gases are coming out, like there's no big explosion because the gases right. are escaping like at like a, you know, a consistent rate.
Yeah.
So Kilauea volcano in Hawaii is an effusive yeah. volcano. It's just constantly, you know, spitting out lava. And
which is so cool. I want to yeah. see that.
Yeah. So, but it's not the houses and the communities and the path, like they eventually have to move, but it's not like you have to like shove your belongings in your car and take off.
Yeah.
Like you, it's a, yeah, it's an effusive volcanic eruption, just like happening, you okay. know, constantly, but like at a lower intensity level.
Yeah.
However, if the magma is dense and sticky, it's harder for the gases to escape. So it builds pressure in the magma chamber, which results in an explosive eruption.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So
this is really interesting. I had no idea. I just thought that it like exploded. And
I'm kind of obsessed with volcanoes now after hearing this. Like I was yeah. already, but I really am now.
Yeah.
So Mount St. Helens, that was an explosive eruption.
Yes.
Which when I lived in Portland, Oregon, some like girls I knew that waitressed with me, they told me so many crazy stories because their parents lived right near the mountain. That's another episode, but.
Oh, yeah. That.
Yeah.
And that was when? That was like.
It was in the 80s.
80s, yeah.
Early 80s, yeah.
Woo. That's scary.
Yeah, I don't think. Yeah. I think it was like 80s. Oh, whatever. It was early 80s.
Yeah.
Okay. So another thing to know about volcanoes is they're, you know, just like with, you know, the like category index for hurricanes or the like, isn't it called like the Vegeta scale for tornadoes?
Like, yeah, EF, whatever.
Yeah. So there's the volcanic explosivity index. And this measures the power of eruptions based on how much material comes out of it and to what height and how okay. long the eruption lasts.
Okay.
So the scale goes from 0 to 8. Mm-hmm. And Mount Tambora, what do you think it is on the
scale? An 8.
Okay, no, it's a 7.
Oh, okay. I wouldn't want to see 8, but
no.
The fact that like if this is the most disastrous tornado and it was only a 7, like think about what an 8 would be.
I know. Well, okay. So Yellowstone National Park.
It would be an 8, wouldn't it?
Well, supposedly there's a super volcano.
Yeah.
Under Yellowstone. And if that ever erupted,
we're dead.
Millions of people would die.
I think that you should run over to Maine just to get a couple states, like, you know, east, if that happens.
I mean, I think we'd be okay. But yeah.
I don't know if we're going to be okay. Like, I thought it was like all the United States.
It would mostly, yeah, it would decimate the U.S., but the coasts would be possibly inhabitable.
God, it's so scary. And it's again, supposed to be like happening in our life. Not maybe in our lifetime, but
I don't think so.
Anyways.
It will happen eventually though, allegedly.
Oh.
But hopefully people will be like living on other planets and can escape by then.
Yeah, maybe.
Okay, so volcanoes happen when magma rises to the surface of the Earth from underground.
Mm-hmm.
It causes bubbles of gas to appear in itself, in the magma. Mm-hmm. And then the gas causes pressure to build up in the mountain, and it just explodes.
So, like, okay, sorry, this is a stupid question maybe, but, like, does part of the mountain explode, or is it just, like, the lava explodes? Like, no, I guess
usually the eruption takes off the top of the mountain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, Was this, okay, so was this like a mountain that didn't have a top?
No, it did.
It did have a top, but when it exploded, it like took it off the top. Is that what, you know what I'm saying?
Okay, it does. Cool. It ends up.
I don't know anything about
volcanoes. No, yeah. So. And we'll get to that, but it definitely.
Okay. Okay, cool.
Okay. And then when, okay. So then when magma comes out of the earth and into the air, it's called lava.
Mm-hmm.
So you got magma underground, lava above ground, which I did not know.
Yeah. That's, yeah, really interesting. Again, these are like things that like, I know magma, I know lava. I thought they were the same thing, but awesome.
I didn't even know what they were. Like I knew lava was the thing that you see like flowing over, you know, the rocks and like down the mountain and it's like all molten-y and it looks like a fucking marshmallow that like is.
Yeah. That's like crispy on the outside, gooey on the inside.
Exactly. Okay. Okay. So it's April 1815. Mount Tambora has been quiet for thousands of years. Nothing's going on.
Mm-hmm.
April 5th, small tremors start happening.
Ooh.
And little eruptions start coming out with pyroclastic flow.
Okay.
So pyroclastic flow is the worst thing ever.
Ooh.
Why? Okay. So it's dense, destructive. It's a mass of hot ash, lava fragments, and gases ejected explosively into the air, and it typically flows downslope at great speed.
Oh, God. So it's like a bomb that's like with hot lava that's
yes, and it's like
at you fast.
It's coming incredibly fast down the side of the mountain. Like it's not slowly flowing like lava in Hawaii, and you're like, oh, my God, that's so cool. Yeah.
That's so scary. Okay.
Yeah. You can't outrun it, obviously.
You can't?
No.
I would try.
You would try and you would die. But that's...
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So between April 5th and the 10th, a bunch of loud explosions are heard from as far as 1,200 miles away. Because this is 1815 and the telegraph hasn't yet been invented... Most people have no idea what's happening. There's no way to get word unless you like go take your sailboat to like the next country.
Oh no, that's so awful.
Yeah. So there's a bunch of like armies in that range, that 1200 mile range that are preparing for battle because they think like an incoming, you know, army or tribe or country is coming to surprise attack them. It was like kind of mayhem.
That's so scary. Ugh.
Yeah. Nobody knew what was going on.
Yeah. I mean, maybe did they use the animals back in the day to be like, where are the animals going? Because you know how people like can do that, but maybe they didn't. I don't know.
I know a ton of animals end up dying, but I don't know. I think they just, you know, the people around the mountain knew what was going on, but they weren't able to get word to the rest of the world.
Yeah.
Okay. So on the evening of April 10th, for three straight hours, three columns of fire shoot from the volcano. The shattering blasts blow the mountain apart.
Oh my gosh. Can you imagine a mountain just like exploding?
No.
No.
No. I mean, I've seen I've seen the video of Mount St. Helens, but crazy. 36 cubic miles of ash, pumice, and other rock, as well as 60 tons of sulfur and other aerosols.
Ew.
Which an aerosol is just suspension of particles dispersed throughout a gas. Like we think of aerosols as like spray.
Yeah.
So those are all catapulted into the air.
Mm-hmm.
And then more pyroclastic flows consisting of ash, magma particles, and gases over 1,300 degrees Fahrenheit.
Oh, poor. No. That is so, that hurts my skin.
Yeah. Well, it would. Poor.
Well, it would.
So it pours from the mountain into the sea, which is like 12 miles away. From the actual mountain.
And it's going fast, the lava.
Oh, it's going super fast. It's pyroclastic. It's not even just lava. It's pyroclastic flow. It's like, yeah.
Yeah.
It's if you, like I mentioned in the first episode, if you have seen Dante's Peak, you know what I'm talking about. Okay.
I was going to actually ask you, is Dante's Peak like based off of this? Because this sounds horrifying.
I think Dante's Peak is probably based off of Mount St. Helens, but in like a much more like picturesque, like mountain town.
Yeah.
With Pierce Brosnan, like being like the sexy scientist.
I know I have to watch this.
Yeah.
Oh God. I might run it tonight.
So, okay. So the blasts, the pyroclastic flow, and the tsunamis that are resulting in all of this like material hitting the ocean.
Oh my God. Yeah.
And like hitting all these other islands in the area, it ends up killing 10,000 people.
Wait, the tsunamis itself or everything going on?
Everything combined. So,
oh my God.
So 10,000 people just on the island of Sumbawa are killed by all three of those things.
Wait, okay. Yeah. How many people are on the island, did you say?
Oh, I don't know.
That's okay. It's
10,000 people die, but then it says it destroys the homes of 35,000 more.
Oh my God. That is so insane. You know, I've never heard of that's not true, but 10,000 people is a ton of people to die in this. Like that is just awful. That is mass.
And I mean, this probably goes without saying, but the village of Tambora, which is like the village below the mountain, is completely destroyed.
Yeah. And like, I was just thinking about it. Like, you know how you said, like, I can't outrun it. Like you can't even like climb on a roof. Or like something to save your life because it's just going to burn up and you'll die. Like it's so terrifying.
You can't hide from it in like a reinforced situation like a hurricane or a tornado.
Like what if you had a basement that like was...
No, because it would come in. Like it would suffocate you. You can't go on the roof like a flood.
No, you can't.
This is why... This is one of the reasons they say volcanoes are like the deadliest and most destructive because there's nowhere to go. Like there's nothing you can do if you're in the path.
Oh my God. They need to invent something like a super like.
Like a fireproof like dome.
Fireproof like metal. Well, you don't want it to be metal because you don't want to like.
No, you'll die of
you'll
heat.
You'll cook. You'll be cooked at 1300 Fahrenheit or whatever. Anyway, go ahead.
Okay. So, Tambora ends up being 10 times more powerful than a very famous volcano, like the one that is more known, which is Krakatoa. Have you heard of that?
No, I haven't.
So that eruption happens later in 1883, but for some reason, Krakatoa is way more, it's a better known volcano than Tambora.
I wonder if it was where is it located?
So it's in Indonesia.
Oh, okay.
But it's like
I wonder if like the population's higher there or like it was a bigger.
Well, it was later in time when there was like the telegraph and everything.
Oh, there you go. So that's probably why. But
okay. Also, do you remember probably in I would think it was elementary school. Did you guys ever read The 21 Balloons? It's a book.
I don't know. I didn't really read.
You didn't read in elementary school?
I hated reading. I literally hated it. Like, you know, when they gave us like summer reading. Oh my God. I like dreaded it. And usually there were books I didn't want to read, but anyways, no, I don't remember that.
Okay.
I did read, obviously you guys I can read, but it's just like, I hated it. At the time. Now I love it.
I was obsessed with this book as a kid.
So should I read it?
I mean, I don't know. You're an adult now, but it's about a guy in a hot air balloon that lands on the island of Krakatoa and he discovers this like sophisticated secret civilization that's funded by a diamond mine on the island. And like every family on the island has their own restaurant.
Oh,
it's really cool.
Is it fictional?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I don't like fiction.
Definitely fictional. And then the volcano erupts and they all have to flee.
Oh.
Anyway.
Okay. You're like, it's definitely fictional.
It is.
And like, correction, I do like fiction. It just has to be the right thing. I'm more of a documentary, like
real, I am too. I am
real too. Kind of thing. Anyway, but there are some great stories out there that are fictional. Okay.
So meanwhile, in the surrounding region, in the days after the blast, the sulfur, the gas that is propelled
Doesn't
into
it
the
smell really bad too.
Yeah, because sulfur smells like fart.
Rotten eggs. Yeah, it's just yeah, like disgusting. Eggs. That's why I can't eat hard boiled eggs. It's like smells like that.
Oh, I eat hard boiled eggs every morning.
I feel like everyone does, and I wish I liked them because they're such great protein. But like,
I
they
eat them.
Smell so terrible.
I don't ever really smell them. I eat them with like really good sea salt and olive oil. Sometimes like good hot sauce, but no. So the sulfur mixes with the air and the water. Let's back up. The water and the air. And it creates sulfuric acid clouds, which is really bad.
Yeah.
It blocks out large amounts of sunlight, which Ooh. Later causes unpredictable weather events oh. in other places in the world. So like there were places in Europe, Asia, the United States where it's like 100 degrees and then it's all of a sudden freezing in a few hours.
Oh, because there's like – it's like no sunlight and like no yeah,
it's all
warmth
fun.
Can get – oh, that's like –
Yeah. People from this time report that – and there's like art that was painted, depictions of the sky.
Yeah.
The clouds turn pink, purple, and red. There are blood red sunrises and sunsets every night. There's massive red fog that obstructs the sun, settles over the land – and makes sunspots visible to the naked eye, which sunspots are dark blemishes on the sun's photosphere, like the first layer of the sun.
Okay.
And you can't see them with the naked eye normally. But for some reason, the red fog made this a thing.
Yeah.
I
mean, the sunsets sound absolutely gorgeous, but like the red fog.
Yes,
thank
and,
you.
And it was gorgeous, but then there were all these other issues.
It's like terrible. Yeah. At the same time. Yeah.
The fog is so thick that wind and rain can't even disperse it. Like nothing can move it. Many ships are forced to stay in port due to reduced visibility, which causes major issues with trade around the world.
Of course.
So 1816, the next year after the blast, becomes known as the year without a summer.
Oh my gosh. Just kill me.
Yeah.
I live for summer. Like, you know, that's my favorite thing in the world. Ugh.
So in some parts of the world, there's no summer, which means heavy snow, frost occurs during the summer. It destroys food crops in Asia, Europe, North America. Yeah. There's famines. Livestock die en masse.
Oh, my gosh.
Die of starvation. There's lung infections caused by the sulfur in the air. Diseases spread like wildfire. It's a fucking mess.
That is, yeah. Like, can you imagine, like, it's snow, like a blizzard in, like, Maine in the summers?
It literally did. There literally was, like, a snowstorm.
Oh,
at that
gosh.
Time.
That's
so
insane.
Do you remember the first word I told you to remember?
Bicycle.
Yes. You're so fucking smart.
Okay. Well, you were like, you're going to get quizzed. So I was like, remember it. Say it 5 times in your head.
Yeah. You didn't drop the ball. You got it.
No, I got it.
So due to widespread crop failures, such as oats, it becomes super expensive to own and travel by horse.
Okay.
So this inventor, Carl von Drace, he invents the bicycle.
No way. That's how the bicycle was created?
Yes.
How crazy.
And he calls it the dandy horse.
The dandy horse. Amazing.
It's basically...
So because of the volcano, like this invention that everyone uses all the time today is still around.
Yeah.
Cool.
Because you had to get around. You couldn't take your fucking horse. There were no cars.
And your horse was probably dead because it was like not
probably.
Getting crops, right?
So, yeah. So the image, the drawings of the first dandy horse. It's like a wooden bicycle without pedals. Like you just walked it, but you know.
That sounds stupid. Miserable. How is that faster?
I don't know. But then they added pedals later, but that
maybe like there were hills. So like they had to walk it and then they got a hill. So they just had to balance on the
way. Yeah. And then they just rode down it.
But then like going up a hill would really suck.
Yeah.
Like it already. Okay.
Yeah. Isn't that funny?
That's crazy.
So the monsoon season in the Pacific is altered. There's widespread flooding and cold weather in China and Tibet. There's terrible droughts in Africa and starvation is rampant and thousands of people have to move their home to many miles away.
And like also the trade is like, are the ships at like a year later still?
No, like, but if it, I think the months after it happened, they were just not able to leave. So it just fucked a lot of shit up.
That's really terrible.
So in the northeastern U.S., in 1816, in mid-May, the weather turns backwards with frost from New England to Virginia. There's snow in June, and on July 4th, there are freezing temps and more snowfall. Thomas Jefferson, he had just finished his second term as president. He goes to retire at Monticello. Is it Monticello? Monticello or Monticello?
I'm not sure.
Oh, we should know.
Is it in Washington?
We're American. No, it's in Virginia.
Oh.
it's his
okay. Home. Also, one more thing. I did terrible in government and politics classes.
Okay.
History, I didn't really care about until I got into college. I was just like not, I just wanted to like make art. That's like all I wanted to do. So that was my life.
But yeah. I mean, you don't have to justify that to me.
I went to, the only time I like got some kind of education was when I went to, I don't remember where was George Washington's house? Was that also in Virginia? Mount something, Vernon, right?
You know, unclear, unaware, not sure.
The only thing I remember from visiting George Washington's house was some like fake dead ducks hanging in the kitchen.
Really?
So that was like the education that I got. But I was also like really little when I learned. So.
Oh, yeah. It is. I think it is Mount Vernon, but I don't know.
I think it is too. But and I want to go back. Maybe that's another place we need to go and like relearn our American
history. Our American past. I think it's Monticello. Yeah. I don't fucking know.
Anyway,
Thomas Jefferson has to apply for $1,000 loan from the government because his crops fail.
Oh.
And he has no money.
So he's the president and he has to apply for a loan?
Yeah.
Why didn't they just give him $1,000?
No, he was the president. He was back retired. Like he had just finished.
Got it. Wow. That's interesting.
Yeah. So failing crops and rising prices force farmers to flee New England, which this is another kind of, it's not just because of the volcano, but it, a large part is due to this, to the volcano rather. This is basically the start of the American heartland of farming because all these people were farming in New England and then they were like, this isn't working. It's freezing here and we're dying. So they all moved west of the Ohio River.
My gosh. This is like so fascinating.
I know. Indiana becomes a state in 1816 because of this. And Illinois becomes a state in 1818, partly due to all of this.
Cool.
Yeah. This is another thing that strikes home for me. Vermont, like, tons of people, thousands of people, I think it said 15,000 people, they all leave Vermont to go farm in the heartland. So, you know, our friend Kate was just here.
Yeah.
And we went on a hike.
Hi, Kate. we love you.
We went on a hike with Lola, my daughter, and we came across like a random stone wall in the woods.
Love it.
And I remember Kate saying something like, why is that there? So growing up, my dad, who's an outdoorsman, he would always tell me, you can hike anywhere in Vermont, especially southern Vermont. You'll come across a random stone wall in the woods, in the middle of the woods. And it's like, who even owns this property? Like, so Vermont was all farmland back then, but then all these people left and the forest grew back in. And that's why when you're hiking in Vermont, it's like, oh, cool. A random fucking stone wall that makes zero sense.
Yes. And we have actually the same things in Maine.
Yeah.
There's like one behind my sister's house. You can find them like everywhere in the woods. And I don't know necessarily like if I'm sure they were farms at some point, but yeah, it's like a property divider. It's like, this is my property.
Yes, it was. Yeah. And then they all left.
Yeah. It's so cool.
It's so cool. I didn't ever really know the origin, and it was just interesting to.
And I didn't even realize that like all of the farming was in New England back then. I guess it makes sense when I think about it, but.
It wasn't all in New England, but it was a lot. It was concentrated.
Right.
Allegedly, according to
things
I read. Okay. So over in Europe and Great Britain, there is a ton of rain in the summer of 1816. In Ireland, it rained for 8 weeks straight. Potato crops fail. There's a famine.
That's the potato famine, right?
Is it? I don't know. I think
there was like
different.
This huge, I don't know either, but there was this huge potato famine. And I'm wondering, what year was all this happening? It was the year after the volcano?
1816.
Let's look that up later and see if.
I think there was another potato famine that was more politically motivated, like war motivated, but there was a famine, but there was a famine like in a lot of
everywhere.
Places.
Okay. So maybe it isn't like the actual potato famine, but I've heard about that in Ireland.
It's very
famine. Yeah. Interesting. We'll have to look that up.
So typhus breaks out in Ireland. It kills thousands. It spreads the rest of the British Isles. It's a horrible disease. That's all I know.
Oh. We'll leave that up to this podcast. We'll kill you.
I know. I fucking love that podcast.
You guys, it's sure, a really good podcast.
I'm sure they have a typhus episode.
Oh, we'll have to check it out. But yeah, check out that podcast. This podcast will kill you. It's on the Exactly Right Network.
Yeah, it's so good.
Which we're obsessed with because our favorite podcast is My Favorite Murder.
Mm-hmm.
Shout
out
to Karen
tell.
In Georgia. Yeah.
So climatologists today say, don't be so quick to blame Mount Tambora's eruption on all of these things because there was already a cooling trend setting in, but Mount Tambora was a big part of why all of these things occurred.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm not like, I wouldn't blame the whole thing on it, obviously, because our world does tend to go into cooling, heating. I mean, like, look at us in global warming right now. It's like insane. So,
yeah.
That's insane.
The southern hemisphere doesn't really get any effects of the eruption, by the way. They're pretty much regular and fine and nothing.
I was wondering about that because you mentioned like Europe, North America.
Yeah.
But nothing about like South America or like Australia. So, like, did it all just stay above the equator?
Yeah.
Interesting.
It was mostly northern hemisphere based. Okay, so do you remember the second word?
Frankenstein.
Okay, so.
Did I do good?
You did so good. I'm very impressed. Thanks. So it's cold and rainy in Switzerland in the summer of 1816. And the author, Mary Shelley, is chilling by her little lake resort. With her other author friends and her husband, who is also an author, and her friend Lord Byron, who wrote that really long poem, Don Juan.
Okay.
You probably read it in high school. Maybe not.
Maybe not.
he's like, yo, you guys, this fucking sucks. This weather sucks. I challenge all of you to write something macabre that reflects how gloomy and dark and cold and rainy and shitty it is here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this inspired Mary Shelley to write Frankenstein.
Wow.
She wrote like a dark, fucked up story.
Yeah.
About, and you know, Frankenstein is basically a morality tale about messing with nature.
Yes.
So that inspired
her. That's interesting. So, and that was that directly because of the volcano?
Yes, the volcano, the eruption made the weather in Europe, the whole
just so terrible.
Summer,
yeah. Yeah.
So they, yeah. So that's, it was her inspiration.
That is so interesting. I love this story.
I know.
It's really sad also, but it's really interesting.
I know. So in these areas that are affected, like specifically Europe, the like crime rates go up. People are thrown into panic. Civilization begins to crumble. Disease flourishes. Because without a lot of, you know, food and work, people are just like huddling up in major cities. People are dying. So there's fewer military available. A lot of people are questioning whether this is like a punishment from God because it's, you know, Mother Nature and it's, you know, inexplicable at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Society is weakening. And, you know, if when Tambora did erupt, as fast as a sailing ship is like when people got word about it.
Yeah.
So its notoriety was buried to a certain extent. But its effects were just so long lasting. It really altered a lot of things in the continents that it hit.
Well, now I'm more scared of volcanoes than I think of tornadoes.
They really screw a lot of shit up.
Yeah. There's nowhere to go.
No. And they have, like, I remember, do you remember that volcano that erupted in Iceland?
Yes. And like people were stuck in Europe for like weeks because it was so bad.
Yeah. I remember. Yeah. It hangs in the atmosphere, the things that come out of the volcano, the matter. Yeah. Like it really does affect weather all over. And like depending on where like the wind blows it.
Can it like not get up into space? Is there like a reason, like if that makes sense?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Oh.
Probably not. I don't know. So today, Mount Tambora stands 9,350 feet tall. So the blast took off like 5,000 feet.
Oh my God.
If you hike up it, you can hike up it. The bowl that is resulting from the blast, there is not a blade of grass in it. Nothing can grow there. It's 3,000 feet deep, 3 miles wide.
What?
Okay.
There's, what? That's huge.
Yeah. That's what it did. It blasted it. Enormous piles of rubble, also known as scree, lay at the bottom of it. It's just like a dry brown bowl. So this author I told you about, Robert Evans, in the beginning, he hiked up there with a bunch of people. And this is like his account of what it's like up there.
Yeah.
You can still smell the sulfur, which means the volcano is still technically active.
Yeah.
And it's now shaped like it was once a cone. Like it was actually like a double cone, but now it's just like looks like a turtle shell from far away.
Wow.
And then when you hike up it, there's like thousands of boulders that are the size of small cars that are just all over the sides of the mountains from the blast. They're still there.
Oh my gosh.
Would
you hike up it with me?
Maybe. I don't know. It seems a little sketchy.
I know.
So, Mr. Evans, the journalist, his closing remarks in his article, he says, and I like this quote, "Few events in history show more dramatically how Earth, its atmosphere, and its inhabitants are interdependent. An important matter given concerns such as global warming and destruction of the atmosphere's protective ozone layer." And I really liked that.
Deep.
And that's the story of the eruption of Mount Tambora.
Wow. That was amazing. I feel 100% smarter right now.
Don't you?
I do. That is incredible. I had no idea about that volcano at all. B, I didn't like know all the other things that went like happened after the fact that like really greatly affected our planet and also created some amazing inventions like the bicycle and like a great story. Frankenstein, which I remembered both.
You really did.
Wow. That is cool. Thank you so much for all that research.
You're welcome.
You did a really good job.
You're welcome. And I really love volcanoes. And
well, I am definitely more scared of them now than I ever was, because
yeah, you don't want a volcano erupting near you.
No. Okay. So wait, is the island like still populated? Like did people eventually move back, and like, why would you do that?
It's a big island. So like people were able to survive and still live there to this day. And you know, Instagram is always a great place to find photos of a specific geographical location. So I went and looked at Mount Tambora and like the area, and there's tons of people visiting and hiking up there, and it looks cool. It's beautiful. It's in Indonesia.
Oh, of course.
Like, it's gorgeous. It's
like gorgeous. Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely a place to go one day.
Wow. That is so great. It's like so educational. Thank you again for all that.
You are so welcome.
All right. Well, thank you all for joining us, and I hope you guys both learned something today.
I love how you say, I hope you guys both learn something.
Sorry.
I hope the two people that are listening to this learn something.
I hope the two of you who are listening to our podcast.
That's probably really what it will be.
I mean, maybe it's new.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, thanks again. Thank you, Vanessa, for a great story. And
thank you, Catherine.
We will see you guys soon with our next episode.
With our next stories. Story.
Okay.
All right. Love you. Bye.
All right. Well, love you. Bye.
Thanks. Let's do it again.